This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Wow, it's another week gone by. The NFL draft finished last Saturday. Let's talk some NFL draft and some NFL football. Eric Edholm joins us, courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, of course, from NFL.com. And Eric, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So people are raving about what the Ravens did in the draft. Are you in that boat? Do you like what they did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I thought they, obviously there's some risk involved, you know, depending on, you know, if anything comes out on Mike Green, that was obviously a character risk for a lot of teams. And I talked to at least one team that had their share of concerns. But, you know, a lot of every team has its own kind of metric on how much of a character risk they're willing to take on a player. And so, obviously, I think the Ravens sustained success. And, they've obviously put some work into him. But Malachi Starks should be a huge factor right away. Obviously the offensive line is kind of interesting. They get, I think, what, three guys, but yeah. How many of them are ready to play right away? Are any of them going to be available this season in a big way? And then Tyler Loop, the kicker pick, I would say was another one that caught my eye. But overall, I mean, there aren't too many Ravens drafts I dislike. I think they do a really nice job overall, but this one was pretty strong.
Hey, Eric, you mentioned Tyler Loop, so I have to ask you, do you think there's a scenario where Justin Tucker is still here come the season? Do you think he's still here come training camp? Like, it seems to me, but maybe I'm too close to it, that you take a kicker. I think it's Tyler Loop's job.
Yeah. We saw a couple other teams, New England taking a kicker and a long snapper and immediately releasing Joe Cardona, their longtime long snapper, afterward. Sounds like there will be a battle there, but as it pertains to Baltimore, I mean, I don't know. You know, obviously, if they were planning on releasing him, they've had plenty of time now. They could have done it. They could have done it during the draft or right after that pick was made and had it, you know, kind of get swept under the rug in a little bit of a way. So I don't know. I don't know if their concerns are off the field or on them. You know, obviously, Tucker had some struggles at times last year and also has this these allegations against them. So maybe they're letting it play out a little bit more. Maybe they have more information than we do, but I'm with you. It feels like, you know, they're kind of moving on a little bit.
Eric, touching on Malachi Starks, though, him in tandem with Kyle Hamilton and also bringing in Starks because our Darius Washington's still here, it frees up Hamilton to be more of a chess piece. But how dynamic could Starks be at the back end of this defense?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really smart, quality football player who I don't think played quite as well as I expected, but close. I mean, he just wasn't as – I don't know that he took that proverbial step forward last season, but if he did, I don't think he gets all the way to 27. You know, that's the kind of the trade-off. And I think – I didn't hear anything in pre-draft scuttlebutt like, oh, there's a concern that he won't adapt or anything like that. I, you know, we're talking about a – pretty high character, high intelligence player. He's played multiple spots in that secondary. I think you can use him to complement Hamilton well. You mentioned keeping Washington as a restricted free agent too. So felt like that was an area they needed to address. And, you know, if you needed to play him at corner, you could. I mean, if there was a situation, an emergency type situation, I think you could put him there and not be in terrible shape. Obviously, the plan would be other spots. But, yeah, I think he's a really good football player who, in this draft especially, fell longer than I anticipated. I mean, every time I did a mock draft, I kept thinking, could he go here? Could he go there? But the Ravens are so good at just kind of letting players come to them and not overthinking some of these picks.
I'm talking with Eric at home. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. One last Ravens thing, at least from me, before we get to the rest of the league. And just Mike Green, the football player, like how, assuming he can stay out of trouble, how good a football player, in your opinion, is Mike Green?
Yeah, really good. I mean, you know, eye test at the Senior Bowl, he passed it pretty clearly. And, you know, the other guy for me in the trenches who really kind of stood out, Gray Zabel, who probably came into that event as a, you know, maybe a top 50 or something player, ended up going 18th. And I think that Senior Bowl showing really helped him. Probably a bigger deal for Zabel coming from the FCS level than it is for a guy coming from Marshall. But still, I mean, you know, didn't do enough at Virginia on the field to really, you know, back it up. It was basically what he did at Marshall that turned him an NFL prospect. And you can see the quickness and some of the violence he plays with. You know, his hands are really strong, and he attacks. Not the biggest guy, but I think he carries his bulk pretty well, and just great get off and a very aggressive style rusher. But at no point did I feel like he was out of control either. So, yeah, I mean, this is a player that I routinely was putting in my top 15s just for that very reason. Now, I didn't know exactly how many teams felt that way about him or if they was concerned. Basically, it came down to a lot of teams just didn't feel entirely comfortable with the answers they were getting in the interviews. It was a lot of, I've moved on from this, I want to put this behind me kind of thing. And, you know, that's great and all, but when the teams are sort of asking pointed questions, and again, I'm not talking about the Ravens specifically, I don't know what happened in their meeting, but multiple teams that I spoke with felt like just some lack of accountability there. But the player has been a pretty impressive guy to study, I would say.
Eric, what did you make of Shedeur Sanders' fall in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, like everybody, I was just kind of waiting to see how it would end. You know, there was when Friday came to a close and he hadn't been picked, I thought, are they trying to get him not drafted? Meaning now you're a free agent, you can negotiate with anybody and maybe get more money than you would have had you landed in the fifth round, but obviously, that ended up and didn't end up being the case. And now, you know, this really interesting situation. Interesting is one way of saying it, but muddled would be another quarterback situation in Cleveland. Here's the thing, though. I mean, between Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur, you can't tell me he doesn't have a decent chance of making an impact on that depth chart, right? I mean, if he plays as well as I think he could play, and as some other people in the league did too. I mean, he could be their starter by the end of the season. I don't know how it's going to shake out. He could be cut. He could be traded. I mean, there any possibility is out there, but there were so many layers to this thing. It was, you know, the talk about character, and maybe this was a hit on Dion. NFL teams are sending a message and all this stuff. And I do think Shedeur probably could have handled the pre-draft process a little differently. You know, some teams felt like they needed to court him as opposed to the other way around, not quite the job interview situation that I think most prospects. And I think having a agent might have helped, you know, because these guys understand how it works and what the NFL teams are looking for and what to say and what not to say and all that stuff. You know, fifth round, obviously, at that point, you're coming in as a backup and you have to prove yourself. That may end up being the best part about this. He's been humbled. I think he's got talent. There were teams that were considering him in round one. I don't care what anybody else says. I believe there were some discussions, especially Pittsburgh at 21. And once they passed on him, the decision was made, no, we're going to wait for Aaron, see how this thing plays out. We'll draft a quarterback later. They did, Will Howard. But Yeah, fascinating stuff. You learn something about the draft process every year, and that was a prime example of that.
Hey, Eric, we were having a discussion earlier about if we go by the premise that the Ravens are the best team in the AFC North, assuming health, did anybody in the division close the gap at all with the draft?
I don't think you can say the Steelers, even if they had a really good draft. I mean, like pound for pound, I thought they did a nice job. I mean, Derek Harmon's going to be a good player for them, and Caleb Johnson could end up being the starting runner. For not having a second-round pick, I mean, they did a pretty darn good job. Jack Sawyer, I thought, was a great pick, even if he's not a perfect fit for their defense. But we're still waiting on Aaron. We don't know if he's going to be their quarterback. I mean, maybe that clears up by next week and everybody goes, okay, yeah, that's what we thought. But until we have that information, I don't know that I dropped him in my power rankings just because, well, we don't know anything yet. So we don't know who their QB is. That tends to hold the team back a little bit. Cleveland, obviously, being in the situation they're in, I mean, great defense potentially and a work in progress offensively, no doubt about it. You know, they should be better, but who knows, really. Cincinnati, I think you could make a case for, given that they kept the core intact. We don't really know what's going on with Trey Hendrickson right now, but you know, overall, I think they used their picks pretty wisely. Still were able to get the offensive line pick they wanted, made multiple picks there. So I think I'm with you. I really can't talk myself. You know, could the Bengals absolutely have a bounce back season? No doubt, right? And look at all the one score losses they had and all the chaos from last year. Maybe there are some smoother seas for them this season, but you know, just simply looking at what's happened over the last 2-3 months, can we say that they've definitively moved ahead of Baltimore? I don't think so.
Last thing for you, Eric, and I know it's silly to grade drafts immediately after they happen,
but
without
it's fun.
Seeing a stat. No, but it happens. It's part of the gig, right? But Eric, what were some drafts that really stood out to you the most, being the best?
Yeah, I mean, Seattle had a lot of picks, but they also had a nice mix of high floor and high ceiling, too. You know, I mean, if the Jalen Milroe pick works out, you know, it's an even bigger – I don't think he's going to become Lamar, but, I mean, if he becomes something in that area code, that kind of a player who's at least consistent throwing the football and a weapon as a runner, of the 91st pick or whatever they got him at, that's a steal. So, you know, we'll see how that all works. Gray Zabel, I think, starts right away. A couple other guys who I think are going to be contributors. So they certainly had a good one. I thought the Patriots made some really smart additions, especially after a offseason spent helping the defense. It felt like the offense finally got its help. And I think the Bears did pretty well, too. I mean, it's going to be fun to see how Ben Johnson brings that Detroit Lions system that he put together, that he built, and use it with Caleb Williams in Chicago.
Eric Edholm, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right, have a great weekend. See ya.
Thank you. It's Eric Edholm, NFL.com. Coming up next, Adley Rutschman, Bobby Witt Jr., they were the first two picks of the 2019 draft. They will always be connected because of that. And where are they person to person as we sit right now? How much better is Bobby Witt than Adley Rutschman? Plus, Michael Elias meeting with the media. We have some injury updates for you. We'll get those to you next.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment. All so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crime-ity.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Here on The Fan.
Junior hits it well, deep into the right field corner. Meisner turns.
Yes!
Gone for a two-run home run.
Oh, I
just got goosebumps. That's beautiful. Keep the streak alive and a two-run shot to give Lugo the lead. That's perfect.
Rutschman to right field. That ball is crushed. And that is a much-needed swing for Adley Rutschman. 0-for-19 coming into today. He's got a two-hit game and his fourth home run of the season.
FanDuel Sports Radio and Masson on the calls is Bobby Witt Jr. and Adley Rutschman both hitting home runs. And Bobby Witt Jr. comes into this series riding a 22-game hit streak. Before we get to the comparison, because they were the top two picks of the 2019 draft, Mike Elias, general manager of the Baltimore Orioles, just met with the media. Cordell Woodland, our own Cordell Woodland, some of his notes. Zach Eflin and Andrew Kittredge will be pitching in Aberdeen on Sunday, starting a rehab assignment. Says the start of the season, quote, has been really disappointing. I'm in charge of baseball ops, and when we have a bad record, that's my responsibility. He also said he's very confident in manager Brandon Hyde and says that Orioles ownership has a desire to win now. He says he speaks often to them, says we want to win with this team this season. This is not up to anyone's standards or expectation, and that includes them. He also says Kobe Mayo is very close to a return.
Yeah, a lot to break down there. Obviously, great news to start with Zach Eflin and Kittredge pitching at Aberdeen this weekend. And, man, Kittredge really flying by what we initially thought. I mean, heck, we were thinking maybe we'll see him by the All-Star break or a little bit after that. But now it's definitely very possible they'll see him in May, and Eflin being back is huge.
One more note. He said Grayson Rodriguez will have reimaging in a few weeks. If it's positive, he could possibly throw a baseball before the end of May. Elias expects Rodriguez back before the end of the year. That's ominous.
I'll believe it when I see it when it comes to Grayson Rodriguez right now. And it's so unfortunate. And we're having Ben McDonald on at the top of the hour at 5. Big Ben McDonald on at 5. And that was one of the biggest things, you know, because Mike Elias was talking about him taking the next step, become an ace. He's got to be able to hit the post consistently and stay healthy, where, unfortunately, he's been injury prone. There's no other way to say it this early on in his career, Ken.
So Zach Eflin, Andrew Kittredge, the headline, they're going to be pitching a rehab assignment Sunday at Aberdeen, which I guess means if all goes well, they're a couple weeks away.
Yeah, I would think we see both of them in May, maybe by Memorial Day or soon thereafter that. But the Kobe Mayo of it all is interesting.
It's very close. He's always very close.
He is always very close. And he's also very close. He did throw in the line he's going to be a very big part of this team, like he did at the All-Star break last year. But when do we see him, Ken? And I think part of it's the Ryan Mountcastle of it all, who's been struggling immensely.
Part of it is the roster construction, which we seem to blast them for a lot, and that is the fact that, as Keith Law said to us a few weeks ago, how is Ryan Mountcastle still here? That's part of the problem. And we talked to John Mioli about this earlier. Kobe Mayo's feeling good about himself. He had a couple of homers last night. Why don't you bring him up now while he's feeling good? Maybe he can give this offense some punch against left-handed pitching.
And small sample size, but he's mashing. He's 9-for-17. He's got an OPS of over 2,000 against left-handed pitching.
So let's get to the Bobby Witt, Adley Rutschman of all. Adley was the first pick in the 2019 draft. Bobby Witt was the second pick. And I was all for it at the time. This is the Golden Spikes winner, getting walked with the bases loaded in College World Series games. The defense was supposedly Major League ready right then and there. The offense hadn't been what we thought, and the defense hadn't been what we thought.
That's the issue, Ken, and hitting on this in the open, and you put it perfectly, where he was the safe, can't-miss guy, where no one, and I'm sure there was a small minority that wanted Bobby Witt Jr., but in real time,
there were scouts
I'm sure there were scouts, but I'm saying fan base-wise. Yeah. Everyone was fired up getting Adley Rutschman because, this guy, Golden Spikes, like you said, walked in the College World Series, but right now, as things stand, May 2nd, 2025, everyone's going to take Bobby Witt Jr. over Adley Rutschman because Bobby Witt Jr. looks like a superstar, finishing second in MVP last year, off to another really, really strong start. If you're just looking at the career numbers, Bobby Witt Jr. has Adley beat in every category outside of on-base percentage, and Adley has one more All-Star appearance than him. So with Adley, look, this hasn't been a failure, far from it, and he's got a silver slugger. And
I'll push back a little, though. Adley Rutschman was supposed to be the aircraft carrier.
Oh, no. Has he?
And so in that respect, has he not, it has been a disappointment.
Has he not met expectations, absolutely. I'm saying he hasn't been a failure.
No.
This has not been a bust of a draft pick, and there's still plenty of story left to be told in terms of Adley Rutschman. But coming off that dreadful second half of the season, this to begin the year, and he started off with fireworks, hitting two home runs in opening day. Some of those balls still haven't landed in Toronto, but we just haven't seen the results. The metrics are there, the underlying metrics. He's hitting the hell out of the baseball, but we haven't seen the consistent results.
We're live at Pickles across the street from Oriole Park at Camden Yards, where Orioles start a three-game series with the Royals tonight at 7. Baltimore baseball tonight, it's the Bone and Jim Hunter at 6 right here on The Fan. And coming up next, we're going to talk some NBA basketball. The second round of the playoffs are about to get started. First round's been great. And Greg Popovich stepping down as head coach of the Spurs. We'll talk to our NBA insider, Mo Hamilton, next here on The Fan. We're live from Pickles across the street from Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Orioles start a three-game set with the Kansas City Royals tonight at 7. Baltimore baseball night with the Bone and Jim Hunter coming at 6. But the NBA playoffs have been fantastic so far. So it's a perfect time to go to our NBA insider, Mo Hamilton, who joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Mo, thank you as always for your time, man. We appreciate it. Before we get to the playoffs, though, got to get your thoughts on Greg Popovich stepping down as the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs, a guy that I would assume is on your Mount Rushmore of NBA coaches for all time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, not even just NBA, Ken, but also the work that he's done internationally for Team USA, USA Basketball, you know, helping to get the program back on the right track and continue its dominance on the world stage. You know, Coach Pop is nothing short of a legend. The news is, I guess I would say, unwelcome, but not totally surprising based on what he's been going through over the past, you know, several months. So we wish him all the best, you know, certainly a legend. And, yeah, he is on my Mount Rushmore.
Moke, the Knicks move on after Jalen Brunson hits a clutch shot at the end of that one. What did you think of their second half, the third quarter? And also, can they push Boston in the next round?
And also, are the Pistons going to be kicking themselves all offseason?
Wait, the Knicks played last night? Oh, yeah. I had no idea, right? No, I mean, there's I don't know how much time we have for this segment. There's a whole lot that you can say about that game and that series. I think really what it is at the end of the day is you have a team in Detroit that I think a lot of people did not actually understand how tough and how good they were. You know, like they finished the season really strong, kind of like the Timberwolves, actually, you know, where they came on late. They're a gifted team. They're going to be in the conversation moving forward. I think this postseason for them was definitely a coming of age. As far as them kicking themselves, I mean, there's no question. You know, you can go back and look at the tape. And, I mean, this is kind of what happens in the postseason when you have an experienced team versus an inexperienced team. Inexperienced teams in those moments where they need to execute properly, they need to close out games strong, they get tight. And sometimes games that you should win, they end up slipping through your fingers because you don't execute properly down the stretch. On the other hand, you look at a Knicks team that's quite the opposite, right? A team that, you know, has a bunch of guys that are playing a bunch of minutes. They're tired. They're getting beaten up. But because of the experience and because you have a closer like Jalen Brunson, you're able to somehow find a way to win these games that you really don't have business winning. And as great as the Knicks were, as well as they closed out the game last night, you know, the final 3 minutes of the game for Detroit was just atrocious, you know, turnover after turnover, missed shots, you know, fouls and all kinds of stuff like that. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around. There's plenty of praise to go around on both sides. But at the end of the day, you really just saw an experienced team. And you saw why Jalen Brunson is the clutch player of the year in the NBA. You know, so kudos to the Knicks for finding a way to pull out a series that was really much, much closer than many people expected it to be. Not me, but many people didn't expect it to be so close and so competitive. So, yeah, now the Knicks move on to Boston.
We're talking with Moke Hamilton's Inside Access here on The Fan. As a Sixers fan, Moke, all I can do is find joy in the misery of others. So let's go to the L.A. Lakers, who everybody told me was going to the NBA Finals. they lose to Minnesota in 5. J.J. Redick, some questionable coaching decisions. Luka Doncic's shape is coming up again, and it sounds like JJ took a shot at him at their postseason or the end of season presser. What about the Lakers postscript?
I'm not incredibly worried about the Lakers. I mean, me personally, You know, I know that when you make a trade and you add a Luka Doncic, I mean, we could draw another parallel here. What they did with Luka is not that dissimilar from what the Knicks did in acquiring Karl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges. So we've talked about this a few times. But long story short, the Knicks have been on a multi-year consolidation exercise where they've been trading multiple rotation pieces and or draft picks for a bigger piece. They've been trading dimes for quarters. At least that's the perception of it. The Lakers did the same exact thing with Luka Doncic. The reason why the Lakers made this trade was not to win a championship this season. It was not to make a run to the finals for LeBron James. It was because they're thinking about life after LeBron. So Luka, to me, I think anybody else watching, Luka clearly was not 100% pretty much all season long. You know, he had nagging injuries, right? He missed as much time as we can remember him missing. And even during the postseason, he just didn't look like himself. You could say, yeah, he wasn't in shape, but he also wasn't 100% healthy. I think that much is obvious. So for the Lakers, I mean, at this point now, you know, they have a generational talent who still is on the right side of 30 years old. And they're thinking about, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, not 1 or 2 years from now. That said, they were favored to win this series. They did have the home court advantage, and they were thoroughly outclassed and just depanced, really, by the Timberwolves. And I think what the T-Wolves were really able to do was just to expose some of the weaknesses in the Lakers' armor. The most obvious was size, but now we also see that their perimeter defense is really, really in question, right? You can fairly wonder whether a Luka Doncic that isn't renowned for guarding on the perimeter and an Austin Reeves who's a bit undersized, a bit light in the cakes, as Charles Barkley would say, you got to wonder if those two guys being your first line of defense in the backcourt, it's fair to wonder whether that will be able to yield you a championship, right? And aside from that, if those are going to be your first line of defense, then the other three guys that you have backing them up have to all be plus defenders. And you need a big guy back there, maybe a guy like a Mitchell Robinson, maybe a guy like a Rudy Gobert. You need a guy like, you know, Steven Adams is someone that they'll probably take a look at over the course of the summer. But the point is, they need a burly, strong, bruising center back there to help them guard opposing centers, but also to give them a fortified defensive line for when those guys get beaten off the perimeter. I think the postseason exposed that, and I think that over the next, you know, couple of off-season cycles and trade deadlines, you'll see the Lakers trying to plug those holes.
Let's get to tonight, Moak. Do the Warriors close out the Rockets?
I think I'm going to say yeah to that. You know, this is a Golden State team that I think talent-wise is much better than a 7 seed. Aside from that, you know, this is a team with experience. You add a Jimmy Butler to a Steph Curry, and even though Butler's not operating at 100%, I mean, we've seen what this guy is capable of doing in the postseason. He's become somewhat reminiscent of a guy like a Robert Horry that I don't want to say you keep him on ice all during the regular season, but I think that Jimmy himself has kind of realized that he's going to be judged by what happens in April, May, and potentially June, more so than the earlier part of the season. So there's some games where, you know, he kind of seems to be pitch-counting himself, you know. If his knee's aching or his ankle's hurting, you know what, he might sit out a game or two during the regular season, but you know what you're going to get come postseason time. I think that was part of the reason why the Warriors felt comfortable making the move for him. And with that team, you know, I think that we might see something similar to what we saw with the Knicks and the Pistons, where you have one team that has the experience, the other that doesn't, and one take advantage of the fact, you know. And if you're the Warriors, you know, Game 7 is not really something that you necessarily want to be a part of. So I think you'll see a bit of urgency in their step tonight as they try to close it out.
Hey, Mark, real quick before we let you go, I just want to fast forward because I think Cleveland's going to play Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. Can Cleveland beat Boston, in your opinion?
So disrespectful, man. We're talking about Cleveland and Boston. We're not even there yet. But I will say that I'm with you. I do think that that is what we're going to end up with in the Eastern Conference Final. And can Cleveland beat them? I think Cleveland can. You know, fortunately, we're not there yet, so I don't have to start looking at the you know, the odds or anything like that and trying to tell you what, you know, where to put the money. But I think that Cleveland has proven that they're on the same level with Boston. The other thing that I would say is that, you know, there's a reason why teams don't repeat very often. It takes a lot out of you to go through a season, play into June, win a championship, come back the next season and do it all again and play into June again, being 100% healthy. And I think that's the biggest concern with Boston right now, is that they don't have their health. They're not operating at 100%. And that's the reason why I think the Knicks can go into the series, number one, thinking that they have a shot. But number two, the Cavaliers, who are a young, spry, fresh team that has great, great depth, I think both of them can look at Boston and think that they have a shot against them. And if it does end up being Cleveland-Boston, you're asking me right now, I might be leaning Cleveland. So I definitely would say that they have a shot for sure.
Mo Hamilton, you're the best, man. Thank you as always for your time, buddy. Have a great weekend.
All right, take care.
Coming up next, we get back to the Orioles as they start a three-game set with the Royals tonight at 7, Baltimore Baseball tonight, the Bone and Jim Hunter at 6 o'clock. And coming up next, we take a look at that Orioles hitting and this young core of hitters. If this team's going to start hitting, they're going to need that young core to get going. Can the young core get going? We'll answer that question next. By the way, Ben McDonald going to join us at 5 here on The Fan.
I think he's really close. I'm really happy with where he is. He seems like he's in a good spot. The production that we're seeing out of him, the quality of the at-bats, the work that he's putting in, and, you know, he's going to be a big part of this team. I think it's really important for us as we look at the timing of when that next major league opportunity is going to be, that it's kind of the right opportunity for him if we're able to control that. Sometimes injuries force our hand like they did last year, and we can't control the timing, but we really want Kobe to have the right pathway, and he's certainly putting himself in a really good position for that.
It's Mike Elias speaking about an hour ago about Kobe Mayo, who is mashing at AAA at 2 homers in a game. Was that Wednesday night? He's a right-handed hitter. This team can't hit lefties. I asked the question earlier, why not give Kobe Mayo some run? The general manager says he's really close.
Yeah, we'll see when he gets the call, but he got off to that slow start and obviously struggled some during spring training. But you look over his last 20 games, Ken, .295 batting average.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's a big one.
And an OPS of over 1,000. And then the small sample size of him against left-handed pitching, he's absolutely mashing. 9-for-17. He's got 4 home runs, 9 RBIs, OPS of over 2,000. It's just when you bring him up, his path to consistent play time is what? And part of that goes back to the Ryan Mountcastle of the wall and just the overall dynamic of this roster. And that's why I kept saying, going back to the end of last year, I didn't see any shot how there would be Kobe Mayo, Heston Kerstad, Ryan O'Hearn, and Ryan Mountcastle all on the same team, and we might end up seeing it on the active roster.
By the way, shout out Beltway Ben for playing Michael Jackson Human Nature early. I put Kobe Mayo's spring training struggle on the front office.
Oh, sure.
Because he knew, and yeah, you could say, well, you got to fight through it. He knew he had no pathway to the major league team.
Yeah.
Like, he's already dominated AAA. A struggle last year when he got here, they did him no favors. And then he goes to spring training, and he knows it's going to take an act of God for him to make the Orioles coming out of spring training. And you expect him to thrive? I don't.
No, I completely agree. And then it gets into the other aspect of this is, can we stop the third base charade?
Yeah, just play the first
still,
base every day.
He's still playing third base. He was at first yesterday, but he's played more third base than first base this year in the minors. Just stick him at first.
It's gotten to the point of being a little silly because it seems pretty clear he's not a third baseman.
No.
And you talk to people, scouts, baseball people, they see him at third base and they go, he can't play third base. So why not just move him to first base?
But we hear Mike Elias say they're expecting him to be a big part of this team, and that's part of this young core that We heard the cut from Elias earlier in the show on MLB Network Radio. Knowing that this offense is going to have to mash in order to win, because we knew going in the starting rotation it was going to be tough sledding. But here are these numbers. Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Jackson Holliday, Heston Kerstad. All of those guys combined, their slash line. 224, 290, 390. 680 OPS, 113 strikeouts to 35 walks, 18 home runs. If the O's are going to do anything this year, if they're even going to sniff the playoffs, those five guys, and I know Westberg's on the IL, yeah, those five guys need to turn things around.
If you want to be optimistic, Jackson Holliday looks like he's getting more and more comfortable. Yeah. Heston Kerstad's coming off a two-hit game. Adley Rutschman, the metrics say he's about to break out. And I feel confident about Gunnar Henderson. So
yeah, I do too. I don't expect them come end of September to combine for a 680 OPS, but that plays a role in this slow start, Ken. The offense hasn't been nowhere near consistent enough.
Orioles take 2-3 from the Yankees. They start a three-game set against the Royals tonight at 7. Baltimore Baseball tonight. That's the Bone and Jim Hunter at 6. And coming up next, is Big Ben McDonald optimistic about the Orioles coming off that Yankee series? We'll ask him when he joins us next here on The Fan.